I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show. Good evening. Professor Steve Cohen, New York University and Princeton University, Russian History Emeritus, joins me. We are observing the ongoing and tragic story in Eastern Europe, Ukraine, of a people's torn apart by the protests that ended in the flight of the elected president Yanukovych in February. Now there's been a new election. A new man is president of Ukraine, although he inherits the same very weak governance picture for the president that was brokered in February by Yanukovych. The parliament is all, and this parliament is extremely aggressive and confrontational towards the eastern part of the country. The facts today support more tragedy. A Ukrainian serviceman killed and 13 wounded in attacks near Slavyansk. That's, as we've come to understand, Donetsk Oblast and Luhansk Oblast, the easternmost parts of the country. They're the richest. They're industrialized parts of the country, the Donbas region, the coal region. And that area is where a lot of the fighting has been. I mentioned for politics, before I bring the professor on, the president of the United States was in Warsaw today meeting with the leadership there, the president and foreign minister of Warsaw. And the president announced a $1 billion fund, which seems modest given the needs of NATO, a $1 billion fund to bolster military training and assistance for NATO allies near Russia. So some money for confrontation. At the same time, the president was said to meet with Poroshenko. There's no report on that tonight. The president is headed to the Normandy commemoration. He'll dine with President Hollande of France. I note, however, right here at the end, that the United States is very much part of the story of Ukraine. The president's remarks today are commitment to Poland's security as well as the security of our allies in Central and Eastern Europe is a cornerstone of our own security, and it is sacrosanct. Very tough language. The vice president is headed to Kiev at the end of this week. Steve, a very good evening to you. The president, $1 billion in Warsaw. You've been watching the Russian media report all of these events. What can you tell us? Good evening to you, Steve.
John, hi. I don't know what the billion is for. Every other day, there's a new billion or $5 billion for Ukraine or for NATO. I think what we can say is that the United States and its allies are continuing to militarize the conflict with Russia over Ukraine when the only way out is political and diplomatic. So far as I know, and again, we always have to say we don't know what in back channels, secret channels, what discussions may be going on. But insofar as we, the public, have been permitted to know anything, the Obama administration, the NATO command in Brussels, have nothing to say diplomatically in terms of a resolution. It's only build up, spend more money. And let me note one thing that really just occurred to me today. I don't know why it only came to me today. But we have a kind of NATO creep going on toward Russia. That's been obvious for maybe 3 or 4 weeks. Gradual movement of NATO forces. That includes aircraft, troops, missile defense, various weaponry toward Russia. When you think about it, as that process goes on and NATO entrenches in these East European and Baltic countries closer to Russia, NATO becomes militarily closer to Russia than it ever was during the Cold War, because between NATO and Russia was the Warsaw Pact countries, part of the Soviet Empire. And now, with NATO creeping toward Russia's borders, I begin to wonder if that in itself isn't a potential for war with Russia. Maybe not intended, but imagine all the accidents that can now happen. But I think what we can say at the moment is that President Obama's trip to Europe is a military mission in regard to Ukraine and Russia, not a diplomatic mission. And in my judgment, that's too bad. That's a shame. That's part of the problem.
We're told that the G7 meeting in Brussels within these hours may discuss, they didn't say definitely, discuss additional sanctions against Russia.
Yeah.
So it looks like not only NATO, but all of the G7 nations are going along with this. I'm not quite sure how to say it, because there's been reluctance by Germany for weeks now to press the sanctions regime on Russia.
Well, you've mentioned something important, the word Germany, because something very significant happened this week. I don't think it was reported in the United States, but it was news in Europe. I believe it's in September, and I believe it's in Wales. I don't know why in Wales, and I'm not sure about either, but I know in the fall there's going to be a meeting of the NATO High Council where they make fundamental decisions about the future of NATO. And a group in Washington and in Brussels have been pushing very hard to make a clear, firm offer to Georgia to enter NATO. Now, you remember that happened in 2008,
right.
And it was vetoed by Chancellor Merkel of Germany, along with the French. The plan was to go, I mean, it almost boggles the mind to think why Washington and NATO would want to pick a fight with Russia today over Georgia, when they've already got a humongous fight on their hands with Ukraine. It's some kind of desire for more confrontation with Russia, but Merkel said no. We won't go along, and she has a veto, in effect, and we are not going to make this offer to Georgia. So what you see is a Merkel, a Germany, because Germany has very mixed views about this crisis, trying to maintain a diplomatic approach to Russia, but constantly doing it in a kind of guerrilla warfare manner, because Washington and the majority, including Poland, where the president was today, are emphasizing the military approach. So sanctions, I mean, Russia asked the other day, my God, what are they going to sanction us for now? You remember, first they got sanctioned for Crimea. Then they were told if they meddled in the presidential election last week, they'd be sanctioned, and they didn't, so they weren't. But now there are threats of new sanctions, and it's become a kind of Saturday Night Live skit. Every week there's going to be new sanctions, but nobody's clear what it's for, so how do you not do it? But I guess it's on the assumption that Russia's responsible for the fighting in eastern Ukraine, for the resistance there, and that Russia's going to be sanctioned because there's a rebellion in eastern Ukraine. Merkel and many Europeans will oppose the sanctions because their economic interests are involved. So we'll know after that meeting, John, that you just mentioned, what the balance of power is in Europe on this issue of more sanctions on Russia.
We're headed to two dinners in Paris. Hollande is going to eat two dinners to keep the two presidents, President Putin and President Obama, apart, I guess because the President Obama doesn't want to meet with President Putin. However, I want to stay in Warsaw before we go on to Paris, because there is
John, before we lose that, I mean, that's really kind of a riddle, isn't it? Since the French invented the menage a trois, why wouldn't Hollande want to have Obama and Putin meet with him?
Yes.
And it's obviously the reason is obvious.
Yes.
Obama doesn't want to meet with Putin, though I would not be surprised if some kind of meeting, which is presented as being a diplomatic courtesy, occurs between now and when both men go to Normandy for the 70th anniversary of the Normandy invasion on, I think it's Friday, June 6th.
Yes, we're heading towards France, but we're still in Warsaw. And when we come back, Steve, I want to talk about this, because there's a photograph accompanying, this is the Telegraph I read, the London paper, reporting these events in Warsaw where the president visited President Komorowski and his leadership. And the photograph is not of two leaders of state enjoying the fruits of victory. Instead, they're walking past an F-16, an American-built F-16 fighter, at the Chopin Airport in Poland, and they're being accompanied by two high-performance aircraft pilots, drivers, and their security detail. This is very much the image of NATO at the brink. So when we come back, I want to talk to Steve about Warsaw and its role in this confrontation in the Black Sea Basin these last years. Professor Steve Cohen of New York University and Princeton University, Russian History. I'm John Batchelor. I'm John Batchelor, Professor Stephen F. Cohen, New York University, Princeton University, Russian History Emeritus, author of two pieces you can see at thenation.com in the rolling crisis that is Ukraine. Steve started talking about the unacceptable direction that NATO was taking many years ago. Flashpoint, remember, in the year 2008, the financial crisis, well, right then, at the same time, was Vladimir Putin is the prime minister at that point, racing back from the Beijing Olympics. You remember all this? He raced back to supervise the Russian manhandling of Georgia. That was the moment that the first note of Georgia joining NATO, Ukraine joining NATO, entered into the picture. Since then, there have been several iterations of all of this, and we're coming back again to the Georgia crisis soon enough. However, NATO and the joining of NATO is always the driving story here for Russia. And I want to go to a photograph that's now on your Daily Telegraph page. If you pull it up, you subscribe to the Daily Telegraph, which I heartily recommend because this is the Tory version of the world. And you remember there's a Tory prime minister in London, a man who has joined with the president of the United States in opposing Vladimir Putin. But in this particular page of President Obama and President Komorowski walking together at the Chopin Airport in Warsaw, they're walking by an F-16 warplane, and two F-16 drivers are walking with them. Steve, this is a NATO at the front picture. Is this on purpose? Did President Obama want this to be flashed to Moscow?
Or flashed to the United States? I mean, his popular ratings, Obama's, in the United States are sagging, and a little wartime-like leadership often revises ratings. So I'm not sure, but whether he wanted it or not, that's what the Moscow, the Russian national evening news called Vremya, the Times, which is controlled by the Kremlin, at 9 o'clock, most everybody watches it. It reaches tens of millions of people. I get it delayed here on cable. That's what they went with tonight. Obama in this hangar, a small group of people look like security detail, a couple pilots maybe,
right.
Some technicians, the president of Poland, and maybe the Polish defense minister examining a hangared American fighter jet, of which there are several in Poland. Now, what this is meant to signify is American solidarity with Poland. And now we got to deconstruct that. First of all, there's no threat to Poland. Poland has fabricated this fear of Russia. There is absolutely no danger of Russia attacking Poland. This is complete nonsense. In fact, about 2 years or 3 years ago, Poland, which had a lot of grievances against Russia, left over from World War II and from the Soviet Empire years, but also a lot of affinities, cultural, political, linguistic, with Russia, there began a kind of detente between Poland and Russia. And it was led by Putin. Putin made it part of his foreign policy agenda to repair relations with Poland. And things were going well, but there's an extremely anti-Russian hawkish faction in Russian politics. Its leading spokesman is the foreign minister, whose name is Sidorsky, and who's been in the forefront of the Ukrainian crisis. And that faction in Poland is prevailing. And what does it want? Well, it wants a permanent American NATO base in Poland. It's wanted that for years. It's clamored for it. And it hasn't gotten it, partly because there are no permanent American bases in Eastern or Central Europe by agreement with the Russians. Even though those countries belong to NATO, the United States agreed with then Boris Yeltsin's Russia in 1997 that, yes, we would take these countries into NATO, but we wouldn't make them the site of permanent American naval bases. That began to change slightly under George Bush. There was a plan to move quick-stripe, rapid-action forces to those bases from Germany. And Obama, apparently, when he became president, continued to build up the infrastructure for bases there. So they are base ready, but no commitment has been made, and Poland wants one very much. There's another backstory here, and that's Poland and Germany. Poland was one of the victims of Nazi Germany. It was Poles died in disproportionate numbers. Hitler's wrath against the Jews extended to Poles. Poles died wherever they lived, including in Ukraine, by the way. Not all these grievances have vanished in Poland, but there seems to be an envy in Poland about Germany's might on the continent and its role in the European Union, its economic might, its political might, and its growing military, not aspirations, but its willingness to become a military power commensurate with its size and economic power. Poland wants something to offset Germany's influence in Europe. And that's one reason I think, I mean, this is just analysis, there's no hard proof, that Poland has been in the forefront of taking Ukraine away from Russia and bringing it into the West. But when Poland says bring Ukraine into the West, it means replicating the old Polish-Lithuanian-Ukrainian empire of centuries ago, that Poland's influence would grow territorially and politically. It's already in alliance with Lithuania, but that's a small country, with Ukraine, which is a large country of more than 40 million people. So Poland has been at the forefront of this, let's take Ukraine away from Russia. Does it mean put it in NATO? Not sure what Poland's position on that is, probably. But Poland is the most militant country in Europe regarding Russia now and the Ukraine.
I have this quote from the New York Times tonight. This is quoting a man named Kubiak, a foreign policy expert from the Institute of Security and International Affairs in Poland. He says, to echo Steve's reporting, the only way for Americans to prove their full commitment to Poland's and this region's safety is to move one of their large military installations from one of the old NATO members to Poland. That means they want a counter to Moscow at their border, Steve. They want to push this confrontation.
Well, but think about that, John. That also means that they want troops stationed in Germany at the moment to be stationed in Poland.
I think that's what they mean by thereby, old NATO member.
Yeah, think this
right.
out.
Right.
Thereby diminishing the importance of Germany in the overall Western scheme of things and inflating the importance of Poland. That's all understandable. That's Poland's, I think it's wrong-headed by Poland.
We'll come back to this, Steve, because we're headed to two dinners in Paris for the two presidents, and Poland will be in attendance as well eventually. Steve Cohen of New York University, Princeton University. I'm John Batchelor. Professor Steve Cohen, New York University, Princeton University, Russian History Emeritus, is here to comment on the decisions by the leaders of men. We've been talking about President Obama's and President Komorowski's decision to frame their conversation in Warsaw in front of three F-16s, one, two, three, in a hangar at Chopin Airport in Warsaw. At the same time, Poland pressing for a major military installation to be moved from old NATO Europe, read Germany, to Poland. The confrontation deepens for the rest of the 21st century in that eventuality. But now we go to Paris, where President Obama's headed. This is to commemorate the 70th anniversary of D-Day, June 6th, which is Friday. However, the news from Paris is silly. That's the only modifier I can think. Because right now, the entertainment, according to anonymous sources at the French Palace, is that President Hollande will eat two dinners to welcome President Putin and President Obama. One of them will be at the palace. The other one will be in another location. We believe that President Obama will eat first, and then President Hollande will go elsewhere, perhaps, to have dinner with President Putin. Steve, this reminds me of the Triple Entente. The 100 years ago, France and Russia working together with Great Britain, U.S. wasn't on the scene at the time, and they were seen as allies. Is there any reason to believe that Mr. Putin will be mollified by meeting with President Hollande? Is President Hollande looking to be a peacemaker here?
Well, there are three factors that come to mind. France is not as divided as Germany about the Ukrainian crisis, because Germany's pretty much split against Putin, and I wouldn't say pro-Putin, but Putin's got a case. Poland is, of course, anti-Putin, anti-Russian. France, there is a segment of French opinion, political, intellectual, policy opinion, that's very worried about this crisis and its impact on the French economy. Remember that France signed a contract some years ago to sell Russia. I think it's called the Mitral. It's a very sophisticated warship that can carry all sorts of airplanes and equipment. And the United States wanted France to cancel that deal, and they did not. And still more, the contract calls for, I think, 8 more to be delivered. It's a very big job. It basically keeps French shipbuilding yards employed. And it's technology that Russia could build and make, but it would be terribly expensive and time-consuming. So it's a very important financial and military deal, and the French are holding on to it. So, and in addition, remember that Hollande, the president of France, his political situation in France is even worse than Obama's in the United States. So he'd like to enhance his position, and this is his moment in the international sun, and he obviously wants to do some kind of diplomacy. So the answer is yes, there are positive or important factors behind the French president's desire to meet personally, both with Putin and Obama, but because one of the two is refusing, I would guess Obama, not together. But anything could happen. I mean, you know, it, like you say, it's a little silly, but it makes a certain amount of sense given how divided Europe is over the Ukrainian crisis.
My memory is that Moscow and Paris, France and Russia, have a flirtation with each other that dates back several hundred years, I think all the way to Peter the Great. Is that true, Steve?
It is true, but also remember that in the interwar years, between World War I and World War II, probably, I mean, I don't want to have somebody write to me and say you're an idiot, but my memory is that during the 30s, for example, France was probably the most Soviet, pro-Soviet country. The Soviet Union held in France a number of very large cultural events. France had the anti-fascist United Front government of Leon Blum, you'll remember. So Russia has looked to France before the 20th century, as you point out, but also in the 20th century, as an ally in Europe. That doesn't mean that's happening today, but France has its own national interest. De Gaulle's legacy is still important, that France should be an independent actor. France is a nuclear power. It has nuclear weapons. Not many, but it has them. And France wants to play its own role, as it did, by the way, in the Iranian negotiations. So France has been active diplomatically, and it's going to be so again this week with Obama in Europe. Don't forget, though, to link up this segment to our prior segment. There, for whatever reasons, Obama began his European trip in the most anti-Russian country, Poland, in an airplane hangar with an American fighter jet. I mean, the military message was loud and clear today. Now, the question is, John, if my analysis is right, that Obama is pursuing a militarized policy toward Russia at the moment, whether he will shift gears in France and it will become a diplomatic approach. That would be the place for it to happen.
One other meeting, we're told. This is the Tory Telegraph reporting, so I'm going to follow this carefully. Prime Minister Cameron is scheduled to meet with Vladimir Putin in Normandy on Friday. Now, I'm completely unaware. Is there a relationship between Moscow and London of note these days? I understand that the banking and the investment by oligarchs is sizable in the richest part of London. But does that mean that Cameron and Putin have some conversation that can knit these problems together?
Well, the London economy, considering the wealth, the Russian wealth in London, would be hit very hard by more sanctions on Russians, individual and corporate. So London's not in favor of the sanctions either. You know, a book was written called Londonograd, Londonograd or Londongrad, that London had been turned into a kind of Russian city because of the wealth. So that's on Cameron's mind. More generally, though, I don't think the United Kingdom is a big player in this crisis. It's tended to go along with the United States where NATO was involved, but opposition is growing. As you know, the anti-European party won a victory, or a sizable victory, the British party, in the election to the European Parliament last week.
The Eurosceptics triumphed,
yes. Yeah, and Cameron is worried about this. I mean, a sentiment grows in England to withdraw from Europe, mainly for economic reasons. But generally, the British are not enthusiastic about these NATO wars, though the British are fighting in Afghanistan. I think that the players, to use an unfortunate expression at the moment, remain Moscow, Washington, and Berlin. I think these are the main players, and that what's going on in France and England to a certain extent are sidebars. The Normandy thing, though, is enormously important. I don't think the United States wanted Putin there. But this is about World War II and its memory and its legacy. And if we put aside the, I would say, one-dimensional and therefore false narrative that Tom Hanks, Spielberg, and the others have written in their movies in this country, where we won the European War alone, the fact is that Russia, Soviet Russia, defeated Nazi Germany, and that the Normandy invasion came after 3 years of Russian fighting and destruction of the German army. Therefore, to have excluded Putin from the Normandy commemoration would have been a profound insult. But he's coming as a kind of distant cousin, not as a member of the nuclear family. And where he'll stand, who he'll talk with. The cameras will be watching Obama and Putin on Friday in Normandy to see if they're close together, if they interact, if they begin to talk. It's all symbolism. But symbolism tells us something about what's going on. Those, I think, are the most important things this week, along with the fact, I want to say this because I don't understand it. If there's a debate in the White House, in the administration, about how to handle the Ukrainian crisis, a debate between what we used to call doves and hawks, we don't know about it because we only hear one voice, the hawk voice. But if there is a dovish faction in the White House or the State Department, it lost the debate when Obama went first to Poland and stood in that military hangar alongside those American aircraft. It lost the debate that the military approach is the American approach. Now, whether Germany won't go along, what France will do, we'll see in the next couple of days.
I want to tell a brief story, Steve, to make your point about Russia, Soviet Russia, being the one that sacrificed and did the heavy lifting against Nazi Germany, this invasion, the Second Front, that's what they're talking about, 1944. When in Moscow, 1985, this is early Gorbachev, I was at the monument that they have in central Moscow, you know, to the battle, Steve. You've been there many times.
Yeah.
And I was reading as best I could with my rudimentary Russian, the tributes underneath each of the battles. I remember them especially vividly because they were recounting what had happened and there were poetic remarks. And I was standing there by myself, a simple American tourist. I'd been traveling overland for some time and was a quiet tourist. Well, you do when you're by yourself and you don't speak the language fluently. You just have conversations with yourself. And suddenly a Russian security guard with the microphone on his shoulder, the way they used to in the Soviet state, approached me and asked me in English, "Do you know that?" And he waved at the monument. And I always took that, and you remind me of it, Steve. I always took that, this is 1985, that he'd been taught that we Americans didn't care about it and didn't even know about it.
Yeah.
And that was, I've always remembered that vividly because I couldn't tell him any more than, yes, I know what it is. And I never could have a conversation with him. And now, what is it, 30 years later, and I wish I could.
Well, you and I have talked about this, that when we were kids, I'm not sure you're younger, but probably you remember, VE Day was a big holiday in this country.
Right.
And it is no longer. Victory in Europe Day. It was May 8th. May 9th, because it's 8 hours later in Russia, Victory Day in Europe remains the most sacred Russian holiday. And that tells you something about history and memory, which continue to shape our politics. Russians continue, maybe because they lost 27 million people, Soviet citizens.
Because every family was scarred,
because
and that didn't happen here, yes.
Every family still remembers and has a drink on the birthday of the one who didn't come home. Because 3 of 100 Russian schoolboys called up in 1941, 3 of 100 came back, 97 didn't. For all those reasons, World War II is just, it happened only yesterday, as Russians say. It was only yesterday. That's a reality, and it shapes the way Russia views the Ukrainian crisis, because it thinks there are neo-fascists there. That's something we ought to discuss one day. Are there or are there not? It also shapes the way it thinks about Germany, and it thinks about Poland. But Russians resent, they remember the help we gave in Lend-Lease, and they appreciate it, but they resent the fact that the American narrative of World War II is about the Pacific as it should be, that's where our war was primarily, and about Normandy, as though the war against Nazi Germany began on June 6, 1944. It didn't. It began on June 22, 1941. So that is in play, and every time they have these Normandy commemorations, the Western powers debate what to do about Russia, because Russia's skin is very thin on this issue.
Professor Stephen F. Cohen of New York University, Princeton University, Russian History Emeritus. When we come back, the face of America to Russia, 70 years after D-Day, is the F-16s in the hangar in Warsaw. What is the way forward to work with Russia to solve this without punishment, without threat for the American people, for Europe? Europe is not on our side. It's not on Russia's side. It might not be the peacemaker here, but it's the vote that really matters. 70 years after France was liberated, thanks to the sacrifice of the Americans, the Canadians, the British, and the Poles. I'm John Batchelor. Professor Stephen Cohen is here, New York University, Princeton University, Russian History Emeritus. His two articles at thenation.com are a beginning of the debate that is absent in the United States, if I follow the professor's argument carefully, about the policy by the Obama administration towards Russia. I published a column in Al Jazeera many months ago before the Ukraine crisis blew up, saying that the best and most acceptable way forward with the contest in Asia and the challenge of the Ummah, the jihadists, was for the United States to make an alliance with Russia, that Russia and the United States are natural friends and allies in the world of business and security. It's not going to happen now. Instead, the president appears with F-16s with the president of Warsaw. However, is Warsaw grateful? Not according to the New York Times reporting. Steve, I read this quote from several Polish analysts responding to Mr. Obama's billion-dollar reassurance fund. The remark, the pushback is, the name is nice, said the anonymous analyst. A reassurance plan, but $1 billion is not enough to reassure both Poland and the entire region. In addition, Mr. Sikorski, the foreign minister of Poland, is saying Russia is testing the strength of the international system to set up by the United States after World War II. She tested it in Georgia, which was an implied ally of the United States. She has now tested it in Ukraine, and I don't think we can discount the possibility that she will test it again. And therefore, our security guarantees have to be credible, which is to say, physically enforceable. Mr. Sikorski, those are fighting words. Can he back them up, Steve? Does Moscow take into account that Poland wants a fight?
Well, we've already put Sikorski in context. We know he's the leading hawk of the leading hawkish country, Poland. It's interesting, though, isn't it, that one of the undiscussed aspects of Obama's trip to Europe and the money that Obama is offering, which is, of course, not a lot of money in that context, one of the undiscussed issues is whether or not Europe shouldn't be paying more for its own defense. It's not even paying by the NATO charter what it's supposed to pay. And the United States has lobbied all these countries to contribute more to NATO. Now, Poland's done pretty well economically in recent years. So I guess the first question is, to Sikorski, well, if you feel you need much more money, why doesn't it come from the Polish budget or from your Lithuanian friends or from the other European allies you've grouped with on the Ukrainian crisis? And the answer is, of course, it would be extremely unpopular in Poland. So that's the long and the short of that. There is no Russian threat to Europe. What Sikorski says is partially true, that Russia resents the international security order that followed the end of the Soviet Union. And it resented it because Russia was left out of it. The long, the short, and the tall of international security in Europe since World War II has been the expansion of NATO to Russia's borders. And that now includes missile defense on ships in the Black Sea. Russia doesn't like this because it sees international security being built on the encirclement of Russia. So obviously Russia's unhappy with it. To say Russia is testing it in Ukraine is complete nonsense. Russia has protested it diplomatically for 10 years, and it's offered alternatives. all of which have been turned down. You remember that when Putin was not president, but still the paramount leader, and Dmitry Medvedev was president of Russia, and he and Obama had this great relationship, which they called the reset. Medvedev repeatedly said to Obama, to make the reset last, you need to revise European security and bring us into it. Give us a full voice in European security. And the answer was no. And this came to head on the missile defense. Russia has offered many times to cooperate with missile defense. Those offers have been rejected. Finally, all Russia asked for was a letter, not a treaty, from the White House saying missile defense would never be used against Russia. And it was never given, this letter. And Putin mentioned that 2 or 3 weeks ago as another example of how they felt cornered by the expansion of NATO. So the Polish view that what's going on is a threat to Poland and the Baltics and Eastern Europe and the old Soviet Empire countries, it's complete nonsense. It's driven by their own domestic political ambitions. And the puzzle is why Obama's gone along with it so fully, at least outwardly.
We have a minute, Steve, and I want to mention that I've learned that when they say it's about the principle, it's about the money. So I'm going to extend that and say when they say it's about security, it's about the money. Yep. Gazprom just took a partial payment negotiated by Günther Oettinger, yes, the EU mediator, just a very small partial payment of what Ukraine owes. Yep. And I believe that the Europeans must deal with the fact that if they're going to absorb Ukraine, they owe Russia a lot of money.
Well, more than that, if they want their gas for the winter, which, after all, is not that far away, they need Russia to continue to send the gas to Ukraine where it goes on to Europe. And Russia has said that after June 6th, if it's not paid its debt for what Ukraine has already received, it won't ship any more gas. So the Europeans are desperately trying to figure a way to get Ukraine to pay that debt. And the way you do it is they owe Russia about $3 billion. They give Ukraine $3 billion on the understanding that it goes to Russia. And I think that's probably already been done. But if we have a second left,
Seconds. Go ahead.
What's standing between a negotiated settlement in Ukraine and all-out war at the moment is the U.S.-backed government in Kiev's assault on southeastern Ukraine. That has to stop. When that stops, talks will begin.
Steve Cohen, New York University, Princeton University, Russian History. I'm John Batchelor.